Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of Creator Spotlight from The Interface. Creator Spotlight is our new series where we talk to creators about what they make and do and how they got started. Today I'm joined by Natisha Chatton from AutoSocial UK. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, so for people that don't know much about you, do you run the YouTube channel AutoSocial? Is that your own channel or?
Yes, that one is my own. Yeah, that's all mine.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I've seen you also do some stuff for other people. So I've you do Electro. Is it Electro Heads?
Electro Heads. Yeah. So that's I kind of guest present for that company.
Ah, nice. So I'm guessing those two things together are like a full-time thing.
Yeah, it wasn't always. So actually, literally where I am right now. So this where I am right now used to be my full-time job. So this was just photographing stock for a local dealer. And then for a long time, I was juggling as many things as I possibly could. So I pretty much went down to say like 4 days a week photographing stock. 1 day a week, I would present for Electro Heads. And then on the weekends, I'd be building my own channel. So it was like crazy hectic. But then slowly, as I've come along, I've just been dropping more and more days at this job, photographing stock, and picking up more days kind of presenting for my own channel as things have kind of escalated and events have come up. And and now I'm pretty much down to, well, it's about 3 days a month here now. And bless them, they're really great because they let me have cars delivered here. And like today, like I'm doing a bit of work for them. But then also, I was like, I need to film a podcast on my lunch. So yeah, they've been a massive support. But so pretty much content creation is now my full-time job. But it's only been that way for probably kind of the last 3 or 4 months.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise it was that recent. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah,
you've managed to get a lot of new cars to review, like the Abarth that you reviewed the other week, and also I think you messaged me as well, you emailed me as well, saying you're with Kia as well. So it seems to be a lot of traveling around and getting new cars. It's very impressive. So it's good.
Yeah, for sure. The interesting thing about this industry is it's the way that everybody juggles the industry and how they want to work it, because with a lot of these events, they sound amazing. And especially when people say to you, like, they'll call me up and they'll say, oh, Tish, next week, we're wondering if you wanted to come drive a Golf R in Wales. And obviously, your answer wants to every time be like, yes. But you do kind of have to juggle with whether the return of investment is worth it. Because for me personally, it's okay if I've been sent on behalf of Electro Heads, because that's kind of included in the payment. But if it's for me personally, then I have to weigh up, right, is the return of investment enough for me to have 2 days away from the business to kind of do this thing? So you want to say yes to everything. And currently I do say yes to everything, but there probably will come a time when you start to say, like, no, I think I have to say no to this one.
Yeah, especially when, one, it's good that the manufacturers are letting someone who's up and coming review stuff. That's really good, because you get the impression that they just only let bigger publications review stuff. So it's really good that they're enabling people to come up and get started. It's the same with tech stuff and phone reviews and that sort of thing. So that's really good. But yeah, you have to balance. You have to balance whether or not that video is going to make the money for you. So do you solely rely on AdSense from YouTube? Do you, or is that
So it's all a bit of a like weighing up from different areas. So AdSense is a big chunk of what I earn, but Electro Heads, I mean, it does feel like everything that I've done, everything has happened for a reason. And there's a lot of things that if those opportunities hadn't come up, it wouldn't have allowed me to be able to do other things. For instance, if I didn't have Electro Heads, I would not be able to not have another job, because I can, having Electro Heads and having a few days a month presenting for them allows me to be able to take a little bit of a step back. And between Electro Heads and my AdSense on YouTube, that's kind of like the bulk of my money. And then the rest of the time I can kind of enjoy being able to go on events and grow my channel, grow my social media. But had I not have had that opportunity approached by Electroheads, I wouldn't have this much freedom. So it's very lucky that that's allowed me to be able to have this freedom. I'm sure I'd still be doing it in some kind of way, but it probably would have involved a lot more kind of working at the weekends.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely, it definitely takes a long time to get where you want to go. So when I spoke, to most of the people I've had on this podcast so far are very much independent. They do a lot of things by themselves. So I spoke to Andrew Till, who runs, I don't know if you've heard of his channel, Mr. Eevee.
Yeah,
he does everything himself. So he films all himself. He edits all himself, and edits can take all day. So do you, what's the process like for, so if we take a typical auto social UK video, what's the whole process like? Because I'm interested to see what that's like.
Yes, so I do film everything myself and I do edit everything myself for my own channel. So yeah, it involved kind of filming the full review with the car and then taking all of that footage back off of the different equipment that I filmed with, and then editing that and then obviously putting that onto YouTube. The interesting thing about YouTube, and I can imagine if you speak to a lot of YouTubers, they'll say the same, is I always started off, well, in fact, before I even begun, I thought that it had to be so perfect and the content had to be unbelievable, and that was the only way I was going to be able to make it. So I bought this really big fancy camera. I didn't know anything starting out, and I just bought this big fancy Canon camera, and I was like, right, that's what I'm going to film my videos on, because I'd seen online that it was good for creating YouTube videos. At the time, I didn't know there's two very big differences between YouTube videos. You have the YouTubers that sit down at a desk and shoot, and you have the YouTubers that go out and vlog as such, which is probably closer to what I do. So the camera that I had bought unknowingly was the one that was for sitting down behind the camera and not really moving very much. And actually a friend who was quite big into tech at the time said to me, that's all well and good, Tish. Like, I like that you're investing in the channel, but did you know that that camera you bought shoots in a lower quality than your mobile phone? So he said to me, "There's really no, because it didn't have automatic focusing, and because I just got what I thought was the right thing. So from that moment forward, I think I filmed one video with that camera, and from that moment forward, I filmed everything on my phone. And I'm 3 years down the line now. I mean, I have two phones. I have a filming phone and my own phone, and I film between the two. And it's just not worth the investment of a big fancy camera, because I have used videographers in the past and there's no correlation to the bigger, more impressive production and better views. The videos consistently do kind of their own thing, regardless of really how high the quality is. I mean, I always try and shoot in 4K anyway, so that's quite important to me. And I try to make quite a glossy production, but it's all shot on mobile phones. And I don't know, I eventually maybe I will upgrade, but for now, there's nothing more convenient than be able to shoot on a mobile phone and airdrop all of my clips onto my Mac. Because then for me personally, when I'm doing everything on my own, that's such a quick process. Yeah. And it kind of takes away the having to bring extra equipment and memory cards corrupting. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong. And actually shooting on a mobile is probably the best way of having consistent kind of content that doesn't corrupt.
Yeah, definitely. You'd have no idea watching your videos. You have no idea that it's filmed on a phone. And it's funny, the amount of stuff probably on YouTube that is filmed on phones. You'd have no idea. So it's a testament to the quality of them, really. So yeah, it's such a good production. So definitely, yeah, stuff I've done. So at the moment for this podcast, I'm using my phone as my main camera. So you can sort of use the phone as a camera for your Mac instead.
Yeah.
The stuff I've done elsewhere as well, I've used phones for cameras, and I noticed you've got the Rode mics as well.
Yes.
So I've used those as well. They're really good.
Really good. Yeah. They're actually.
Yeah.
So the company that I'm here with today, they've been such a huge support in what I'm doing, because I took on that role during lockdown, and I said to them, like, ultimately they always knew that this was the goal. The channel was was what I was aiming towards. So as much as I wanted to work for them, I was never going to be putting everything I have into that job, because ultimately I wanted to grow my YouTube. And they were so supportive of that. And in fact, they were so supportive of that that they bought me my first Rode mic. So they're like, we want to be part of this journey. Like, we want to support you. So I think I've done some work with them previously, because they were very early on. They were one of the dealers that gave me cars to be able to create content.
Right.
And they said, like, we want to continue this support. And by doing that, like, we want to improve your content. So here's a Rode mic. And yes, it's two years down the line, and I still use that same Rode mic, and it's still really good.
Yeah, they're really good, actually, yeah. So that's the very first video you did was on a Up GTI, I think.
Yes,
So we've got that being common. So my car I've got at the moment is an Up GTI as well.
Oh,
so
amazing. I've got another one now. I've bought another one.
Have you?
Yeah.
Awesome. So that very first one, is that from the same dealer you're at now, is it?
No,
so
that was how you got that? At the time, okay. I worked in sales at Volkswagen. So that was my demonstrator car. Yeah, that was when I very first started out. So that was my demo whilst I worked at Volkswagen in sales. But I never really liked working in sales. I knew that I needed to get away from doing that.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's a great little car. I bought mine when it was actually discontinued. So they pulled it off sale for a period of time due to, like, emissions, I think. But it bumped way up in price after that. So I managed to pick up one that was 6 months old, thankfully, while it was still quite a good price, it's a great little car.
So there is nothing that comes close to that car, because on my channel, a lot of people often joke that I'm Volkswagen obsessed, or I'm Volkswagen biased. And I didn't actually really want to get a Volkswagen, but when I lined up what I needed, so I needed a car which was reliable, that had warranty included, that was fun, that was going to, like, have that element of performance to be able to create content for the channel. But I don't like particularly big cars. It needed to be something small. And there is nothing like that that is that much fun that can still average on, like, 55 miles per gallon. It's such a good car.
It's amazing. It's relatively comfortable. There are some bits of the roads which are a bit, like, oof.
Yeah. But,
I've done holidays in it. It fits a lot of stuff in there. It's very comfortable. For how much noise it makes and how much drama it makes inside the car, and the miles per gallon you get back from it, it's great.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely.
Yeah. Out of all the cars you reviewed and owned so far, what would be your favorite one that you've reviewed, do you think?
Oh wow, that's such a hard hard thing to answer, because there's been so many, and I love so many different cars for so many different reasons. I actually, on the channel, I don't tend to do anything too out there expensive, just because for me personally, it's not the content that I like to consume, and I feel like I can openly talk about kind of, like, everyday cars that we can actually afford. That's why I love the Up GTI so much, because it's like, it's not this really flashy car that costs loads and loads of money. Like, it's actually a car which is accessible and fun. I love my Up GTI. I don't think there's anything quite like it on the market. I have, however, since I've started the channel, fallen in love with Hyundai's and everything that Hyundai are up to. I love the Ioniq 5. I think that car looks incredible. Charge rates are amazing. It's got a really good amount of range. It's just different as well. And it's like the space is completely reimagined for an electric car. And then on the whole other side of the spectrum with Hyundai is their performance cars, and the i30N, the i20N, and even the Kona N. I've never driven cars that quite give you a smile like those cars do. I think what they're doing is just amazing at the moment.
Yeah, they've, especially the Chinese brands and the Korean brands, they've definitely come an extremely long way in like 20 years.
Yeah.
I remember watching a very, very early episode of Top Gear from like 2003, 2004. They had a whole 10, 15 minute segment on Korean cars that are crap.
Yeah.
And if you look now, coming where we are now, it's they've done such a good...
What?
They've launched so many good cars, like the electric cars and...
It's just, so. In general, it's a mad time for cars. Like, it's because I think... obviously it's always been an interesting industry to work in, and things have always moved quickly. But the thing with being in the automotive industry at the moment is even the people who are deep into the industry have no idea what's going on, no idea what's happening next. Mm. Because it's like things are moving so quickly, and the brands who used to be at the top of their game are very, very quickly being overtaken by brand new brands. And just the switch of, like, I think for ages, I mean, I do come from a place who I like an underdog. So I always concentrate a little bit more on what the underdogs are doing than perhaps the big brands. But I really think there's been a massive shift from between the days of everybody wanted to own a Mercedes, an Audi, or a BMW. That was the goal. Everybody wanted to own one of those cars. I don't think that's like that anymore. I think people are willing to kind of look at the kit, look at everything. Like, it's much more, people are less interested on the badge on the front, more interested in what you're actually getting. I mean, it's, for instance, like the cars that Kia are coming out with, like the Kia EV6. There is nothing premium or non-premium which comes close to that car in every sense of what it's worth. And yeah, I think it's a really exciting time for the industry because, yeah, it's just so many twists and turns and just not knowing what's going to happen next.
Yeah, definitely. So one car that definitely has that characteristic about it is the MG4, I think. Yeah. I think you reviewed it on Electroheads.
I did.
And everyone that I've spoke to so far has raved about it. Just the value of what that car provides. That's another example of MG's combustion cars weren't the best when they first came out 10 years ago, I think. And they weren't quite there, but they're electric models. Everyone seems to love them. I mean, people are using them as taxis of the MG5, so...
I think the thing with
everything's turned on its head.
It definitely has. And the thing with the MG4 is that I went to review that car. And I do a little bit of research before, but I tend to hold a lot back and just go on my own opinions. And with that car, I just was waiting for there to be something that it wasn't good at. And it just didn't come. It was really consistently good at everything. And the only thing that I think it falls down on, especially from trying other kind of Chinese cars like the Aura, the new Aura Cat, the infotainment system, it isn't great, but then everything else surrounding it is so good that I really, really don't think it matters.
Yeah, it's the simplicity of it as well. There's not many trim levels. Was in like two or three. Yeah. There's no options from what I can see. Yeah. And then you mentioned the infotainment, but when you compare it to something like the ID3, the ID3 is 12K more, I think. Yeah, 12K more for roughly the same thing, but the infotainment on those isn't quite as good as it should be.
It's less forgivable. I think that's the thing. I think they're not perfect. These Chinese cars are not perfect, and nobody says that they are. But the difference is because of the price point, they're forgivable. Whereas it's like, I think a lot of people are losing a lot of that connection that they had with more premium brands like Volkswagen, like Audi, because it's less forgivable now. You don't want to be paying £50,000 for a car which is really difficult to use and doesn't even have alloy wheels. It's definitely, I think, bringing people's mindsets round.
Yeah, it's crazy. The car people I spoke to... before on other episodes, they've said the same thing. It's like you said, everything's just twisted, and I can see why people don't know what's happening next.
So.
So in terms of you mentioned you got the BAP GTR as well. You've gotten is the Abarth that I've seen on the channel, is that another daily driver you've got, or is that
the BAP GTR was a replacement for the Abarth. The our bath was actually quite early on. So I used to have a little Volkswagen Up before, but not a non-performance version. Like, it was a nice version. It was a street Up. I loved it. But I had that previously. But with the prices of cars just going insane, and I think I was on like 48,000 miles in that car. And I just thought, now's the time, if I'm going to cash in on that vehicle, is to do it now. And I think I had it for 2 years of ownership and lost no money on it at all. So I just wanted to get out of the finance and just at that point, sell it when it was worth a lot of money. So it left me without a car kind of to drive every day. I didn't really know what I wanted to do and I didn't really want to commit to a vehicle. So I kind of reached out and said, does anyone know of any short-term leasing? And some people approached me about like various subscription services of cars. And there was On2 was the one that came up a lot. So they're the electric car subscription service. Yep. I've done a bit of work with them recently. But it was also the one that they approached me with was Sogo. So Sogo, very similar to On2, are a subscription service. But they also do petrol cars as well, although less and less now, but at the time they did. And they approached me and basically said, like, do you want to have a quick look on the website, see if there's anything that takes your fancy? And then I just saw this like bright green Arbath, knew nothing about them other than I knew that they made a lot of noise, and I was like, oh, that could be really interesting for the channel. So yeah, so we had a bit of a discussion, and I ended up leasing that off of them. But the funny thing about it was when we first spoke to them, I literally said to them, I'm probably only going to keep it 3-4 months before I decide to do something else. I ended up having that car a year and a half. And they physically had to like prise it out of my hands and being like, no, this isn't the idea of the website. You need to give this back now. Like, of course they'd have let me stay in it, but it was not really fair because it was not really what it was designed to be. So that's what forced my hand in buying the Up GTI. But as much, it was a very much love-hate relationship with that car, but I miss it a lot.
Yeah, they are quite, from what I can gather, I've never driven one, but I can gather they're quite small inside, there's not much space, but the noise probably makes up for that.
I mean,
so
there's so many things that are completely unforgivable about it. The seating position is absolutely dreadful. There, if you think the Up GTI is a rough ride, it's such a rough ride. The equipment is so low on them, and I absolutely dread to think if that car was to go back through like an NCAP testing, because I don't think it would even come out of a single star, because it's got none of the modern equipment. But then you just forget all about that when you put your foot down, because it makes so much noise and it's so engaging and it's so much fun to drive, and they look great as well, that you just forget. You forget everything that's kind of like negative about them. So yeah, I certainly wouldn't call it a good car, but it is a fun car.
Yeah, so on the subject of the Bath, so when you reviewed the Abarth 500e, I think it's called, if the Abarth, the petrol ones are not massively good quality, then that one looks amazing quality. I've watched reviews of the Fiat version, and it's nothing like a Fiat 500. It's completely different car. It's amazing. Did you have a chance to drive that on that press launch?
No, I didn't. Were driving it around, but it's not being able to be driven yet. But like you say, essentially the setup is very similar to the electric Fiat 500, just with a bit more power. I can imagine it's going to be slightly stiffer in its steering. So it will have a different setup. I can imagine it will be reasonably the same.
Yeah, it looks very good quality. A lot of materials they've used, and the infotainment screen looks pretty good.
Yeah, a lot better. Definitely. Because that was a problem with the previous one, you see. It was tilted, but it was tilted for left-hand drive. So it was tilted towards the passenger. And the problem was, is that when it was sunny, you couldn't see anything. you couldn't see the screen, especially if you had a convertible. Whereas now, the new slightly larger screen, it's a lot easier to use. Yeah, it's a lot better. I think The problem with the Abarth 500e is the price point, because the Abarth was always like the people's car. It was a car a bit like the Up GTI, which was accessible. Now they think that the Abarth 500e is going to be the best part of £45,000. And which is just insane. Absolutely insane. So it's like...
Yeah. In my head, I was thinking below 40 maybe, but that's
quite... Well, I came in with 36,000 because... That's the because the top spec 500E is like 35. So I was like, well, I reckon about 36. Mm. And they were like, go a bit higher, go a bit higher. So I think they're going to start from around 38-40. But the one that I reviewed, which is the Scorpion Nizima, they always have the most ridiculous names. Yeah, I think that's going to be the best part of 45 probably.
Cool. Yeah, while we're on the subject of Onto... that seems like a really, really good idea. Yeah. That does. I mean, I watched. There's a guy, Ian. I can't remember his last name. Ian.
Okay.
From
Hubnut,
on YouTube. Yeah. He's primarily old cars, basically old, random things no one's heard of and all that sort of stuff. But he's had a 500D as well, and it's quite interesting to see his take on it. Where he lives in the middle of Wales. It's such a good idea. All the like the charging cards and the insurance as well, isn't it? And the
breakdown, pretty much everything idea. Included.
I know they've reached out to quite.
It's I think as well. Yeah. Like when you first hear the price and you're like £500 for a Fiat 500, you think, oh my god, that is so much money. And I know it is all a marketing ploy, but genuinely, if you break it down, it really isn't far off of what it would cost you to have like a petrol car. And it's just it. For me, the only thing I find about it, and the only thing about there, I mean, the car goes back soon, so I can talk openly about it. The only thing I found is that they've given a lot of those cars to people who have never had an electric car before. And I feel like the ownership is very, very, very different between Onto. I mean, it's all well and good for me to say, here's a car worth £500 a month and all your charging's free. Well, you're going to be well happy. Like, you're not going to feel negative about that. And the difference is every time I go to charge the Fiat 500, because they get free charging at Shell Recharge, Ionity, and also Instavolt, which covers quite a large portion of them. And every time you go to charge, you're well chuffed because you're sitting there and it might take you 40 minutes to charge the car to like 80%. And usually you'd be sitting there thinking, God, I'm fed up. But because it's not your money, you sit there thinking, like, feeling quite happy about it. You're like, oh, I'm spending somebody else's money. And you see that price going up and up. And I mean, most charges are now around 75p per kilowatt. So it's like to put 100 miles in the Fiat is costing over £20, which is expensive. It's a lot of money. So it's... As much as I think it's fantastic, and I do think that ownership, using Onto as an ownership, is fantastic, it does lure you into a little bit of a false sense of security. Because had I had a car that I was then paying £20 to get 100 miles, I wouldn't be as happy as I would if I was spending somebody else's money. So it's all spins and roundabouts. And actually, because this information is available to everyone, I did have an email come through to them, and I thought this would happen. So they've now dropped Shell Recharge. You can charge for free at, I think it's Instavolt, but if you want to charge at Ionity, it's a further £100 a month to pay. Yeah. But it's because I knew that it wouldn't be viable for them, because everyone is using those chargers to charge their cars. And it's costing £200. Like, if you think of it as it costs £20 per 100 miles, and people can put 700 miles on those cars a month, like, they're losing a lot of money on charging. So I kind of always knew that was going to happen. It is a fantastic idea, but people have to be careful that it doesn't lure them into a false sense of security with electric cars.
Yeah. Definitely, it's the same reason why the Tesco charging has now gone paid. It can only be so free for so long, and with the cost of electricity,
I probably put my foot in that with I did a Volkswagen event, and obviously Volkswagen look after the cars, and I said to them, oh yeah, it's a nightmare now that they've cancelled free charging, because I used to leave my car there and walk home, and they were like, you are literally the reason we've had to stop doing it for free. But it's everybody was doing it because it was so accessible. And I would leave it there for a few hours and then come back and get my car. But it's not really what they were designed to do. And unfortunately, it was people like me that were abusing them. It's the reason that they got taken away. But yeah, it's a hard time for electric, actually, because a lot of things that were pros are now kind of not so pros.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a number of things, like the road tax was going to come into play in a few years' time. The price of electricity has gone up. What other things? There's the government grants gone as well. So there's quite a few things recently that's sort of all at once just hit it. So yeah, so I think that's all I got time for, if that's okay. Well, not got time for, but all I've run out of stuff, so... yeah, thank you for joining me. I'll just do the outro a bit, if that's okay. So, okay, thank you, Natasha, for joining me on the Creator Spotlight. This is actually going to be the last episode of 2022. We'll be back sometime next year for season two of this the podcast. If people want to get a hold of you or find you on social media, where can they find you?
So it's Auto Social UK on YouTube, so that's the main outlet, and then similar on Instagram, but little dashes in between each of them, and TikTok as well, also Social UK.
Yeah, we'll put the links down below for you so people can find that. You can also find Natasha on Electroheads as well, where she sometimes does guest videos as well. So thank you for joining me, and I'll see you again next time.
Thank you for having me.